Now it's time for the complaints.
And he's just impeccably dressed, man. Every time I see him, I'm like, wow, just looking sharp.
There's a famous picture of, like, Andre Agassi, like, kissing it.
And I'm glad I wasn't there to throw up a little bit in my mouth.
He's just a tower of despair.
Kudos to Wizards for that, even if they can't design a trophy.
I want to thank all my adoring fans.
The Nerd's Nerd. Oh, you brave soul, you survived the jet lag from Ireland, and now you're thirsting for even more. The only thing we can really do to slake your thirst is open one with you and get into this episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Matt Hurley, and he's the birthday boy, Brian Tibbetts. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be wearing the crown. We'll get to that after our Pro Tour Pick'em a little bit later on in this episode of Tryhards. Birthday boy, we'll start with you. What are you drinking to get us started?
I am drinking a birthday beer that was given to me by my friend Kate. She came bearing two bottles of the very famous Oma Gang of Cooperstown, New York. Most people know them brewing the Duvel, which is like a Belgian. It's delicious. So they came out with a Game of Thrones series of beers. So tonight it is the Take the Black Stout in honor of the Night's Watch. So the Take the Black Stout is quite yummy, I must say. And it's coming here in a, well, it's a giant pint. And I'm definitely going to finish it. I just hope I don't have to open up the other bottle tonight. Yeah, this is really, really good stuff.
We've got a lot to get to. I hope you do open the other bottle. Hopefully we won't have to banish you to the wall. Matt, it sounds like you're over most of your sickness, though I did hear a cough there. Everything okay? And have you rejoined the world of the drinking?
I have. I'm drinking, Sean, I think you've had it before, the Bell's Hop Slam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's only out once a year.
Really good. Yeah,
and, you know, being that Lauren works at a liquor store, she got me 2 6-packs, which I didn't really realize the 6-packs were $19 a piece, but it's amazing. On top of that, Friday on the same beer news, or I'm sorry, this Saturday, we're going to a very large ale fest. They call it the Tailspin Ale Fest. It's at the airport. We're actually getting a bus from a local restaurant to take us down there, and there's like 240 breweries there, and you can go around and try them all. You get a mug and all that stuff. But the restaurant we're going from, they're having their fresh Hop Slam keg opening the day that we're leaving there. So we're going to drink Hop Slam for like an hour or two before we go take the bus down to the Ale Fest down at the airport.
Oh, that sounds like one, a great time, and two, a dangerous time.
Well, that's why the restaurant we're going from is only like 0.2 miles away from our house, and we're getting an Uber home from there. So, and we get a free ride back from the airport back up to the restaurant. So I can't complain about that, but this beer is delicious.
After not having been to Louisville for years in my life, I find myself having been there twice in the last 6 months, and the town has both good eats and good drinks. So, Matt, you're probably going to be a regular stop for us here on Tryhards. You guys are both Scotch guys, so you'll hopefully be a little bit jealous. A friend of mine came over for Sean's Wild Creation Taco Night a couple of weeks ago and left me the bottle of Balvenie that he brought over, the 12-year double wooded, not oaked, because it goes whiskey oak barrel and then into a sherry oak barrel, and it's a single malt Scotch. I've got about 3 fingers of it was all that was left. So I've got the Balvenie going here tonight in the command center for this episode of Tryhards. I hope you pop something open that you enjoy. Treat your ears to the rest of Tryhards. Guys, what magic did you play this week? Birthday boy, I'll start with you again.
Well, Sean, as you know, yesterday I popped on and played some Legacy with some jerk from Quint. Oh, wait, that was you. That's right. No, that's unfortunately, that's the only magic I played this week. We got in 3 games. So
and I thought
fun.
It might be the only magic you played this week, so I wanted to make sure we could jump on for an hour. Now, I'm thinking about going to Columbia, Missouri, which is a very short drive. Brian and I both used to live there for a Legacy tournament in a couple of weeks, so I wanted to get in some reps with Blue Black Reanimator, and I haven't put the deck back together since the Chancellor of the Annex technology has become in vogue, and I haven't played the deck with it. So Brian was good enough to give me a couple of games, although against one of Reanimator's tough matchups, Brian loves miracles, and you did take 2 out of 3 from me.
Miracles versus any kind of show and tell, sneak and show, reanimator combo type stuff. We're just kind of sitting on the edge of our seat the whole time saying, please God, let there be a Terminus in the top three cards after I activate top. And thankfully there was enough of the time, but yeah, that was a really good matchup. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how you do with that.
Hurley, what Magic did you play?
Well, again, I only played online. I was made fun of by my co-host because Friday night, I was like, you know, I'm going to try to get the cards together. I was out on work Friday morning or so, and I ran past the shop, and they didn't have hardly any of the cards I needed to put my deck together. I was like, you know, I'll do something else. And I found a PPTQ Friday night that was online. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll play this. And I'll go ahead and read the text for the listeners that I sent to you guys.
I might have to get out the edit button for this.
I'm super bitter, but right now I hate losing it sealed to someone who has 9 flyers, an Angel of Invention, and a Johnny in one match. And in the other, he had 2 of the Improvised Dragons, which are the 4-4 with Improvise, and 3 Shocks and a Brawl. I got a little salty. I went 3-2 on it, and so I did not actually get to go on. But then I ended up playing a few other drafts as well and watched a whole lot of the Pro Tour. I will say this, the sealed PPTQs are fun online because it's 5 rounds, and if you lose 0 or 1, you get to go on to the finals, which the only reason I played was the finals were actually on Sunday, and this was Friday night. And then the other thing is, you know, you can actually sit down and you can – you know, play 4 or 5 hours so you can actually get it knocked out and you're not going somewhere and not going crazy. So, no, it was a lot of fun. And then I played a lot more draft. I'd like to think I'm getting good at this draft format, but I have a lot of 2-1s under my belt and not a lot of 3-0s. And so I still have a lot of room for improvement on this.
I got out to F&M. I had talked about the 5-color Eldrazi Planeswalker deck before. Played that a few weeks ago, realized, ironically, the Eldrazi were the worst part of the deck, so I just made it a 5-color Planeswalker deck. And it drew a lot of oohs and ahs and how are you doing that? And only one of the other players in the room was really able to crack the secret. Here's the secret to it. Yeah, it plays Planeswalkers of all 5 colors, but it's really just a green-black control deck. The other Planeswalkers are just like 8 cards that you splash in there. You're just playing Fatal Push, Grasp of Darkness, Murder, all of the green cards like Oath of Nyssa, Traverse the Uvenwald to fix your mana. So it really just fixes your mana and then murders everything the opponent plays. And then when you get a chance, drop a Planeswalker. By then, you've got your colors covered. It looks a lot fancier than it is. It's really just a green-black control deck at heart that plays some other colors when it's convenient for it. It was a whole lot of fun, but it was a lot of fun for people to watch. And I have a feeling people were kind of citing me in for game day coming up. So I'm looking to maybe take a little left turn coming up this weekend so everybody doesn't know what I'm going to be rolling out. It was a lot of fun, though, and coming up in the future, we may have some space to post those crazy lists in different articles here on Tryhards. More information on that in the coming weeks. Matt, you referenced it already. Pro Tour Aether Revolt. They were in Ireland over the weekend. Let's get down to it. It turns out to me that I was able to make a couple of quick inferences from watching the bulk of the Pro Tour. It turns out pros will play aggro. They're not just married to control strategy, and aggro can actually be pretty good. The USA was the only country that was embarrassed this weekend, as Brock Parker was DQ'd after round 5 for intentionally misrepresenting the game state, i.e. life totals, to his benefit. To me, guys, this just means he felt like he was either outclassed or outmatched, and he was looking for an angle to help him out here. And then we'll get to the big controversy at the end of day 1 in the 7-0-7-0 matchup. Cesar Segovia and Tien Nguyen were playing against each other to go 8-0 on the day. Cesar said attackers when he was meaning to say go to combat. Tien then asked for a judge to see if Cesar missed his chance to both crew his dominating vehicle, I believe it was Heart of Kieran, and to use Weldfast Engineer's trigger at the beginning of combat. After a long conversation with multiple judges at multiple tiers in multiple languages, it was determined that Cesar had, in fact, missed that. That set off a text storm amongst the 3 of us, and just to sum up quickly, I said this, I would hold my opponent to that at the Pro Tour level, but not at any other level of enforcement. And you guys seem to be pretty well in agreement with me. Matt, I know we did a lot of back and forth on this ruling with Cesar Segovia in the hot seat at the time. I was doubly impressed by his ability to shake that off and come back and win the match in games 2 and 3 and end the day at 8-0.
I hate that it's, I'm not going to call it rules lawyering, but I absolutely hate that this is an issue within Magic. I don't really consider it a well-positioned, just common shortcut. The way I also look at it is, you know, you're right, Sean, it's the Pro Tour. We have to hold them to a little bit higher standard, I guess, than other, you know, than other tournaments. Playing Legacy, I always say move to attackers or move to combat step. You know, I make it very clear what I'm wanting to do. Maybe there's a language barrier there. I don't know. But I think it's kind of a BS shortcut, if you want to know the honest truth. If I'm looking at it from just a Magic player, not a, okay, you know, I watch a lot of competitive Magic.
Brian, there are rules differentiations. Pro for the Pro Tour, competitive for your GPs and your SCGs. And then you have the lower level of rules enforcement that all of your game days and FMs are run at. I think at this level of pro, you have to be stringent with those rules interpretations. Now, language barrier is a whole different issue. How'd you see this play out, and what's your overall takeaway from it?
There was a couple things that Segovia did that kind of confused me. First of all, not crewing his vehicle on his main phase. I know he doesn't have to. That was one little misstep there. The other thing that I always find strange is Weldfast Engineer, the language on the card says, at the beginning of combat on your turn. If you say attackers, you have kind of shortcut to that. And Sean, I agree with you. At the Pro Tour, you really have to be very, very specific with what you're doing. I think that there's something to be said for Wizards maybe simplifying this process where it's kind of like, okay, end of main phase, beginning of combat, something like that. Because then you can say beginning of combat, trigger, whatever. But how many of us have anything to do at the beginning of combat prior to, you know, declaring attackers? And I think that's just what the shortcut has gone to. And that's why he got caught in that. So I don't fault the other player for calling the judge and doing that. I did feel, however, that there was a lot of, I got you on this and there's no way you're going to get out of it. I didn't think the judge spent enough time trying to explain it and things. And I don't know if he said attackers or if he said combat. And that's the thing. Kai Budde actually weighed in on this on Facebook, and he was really, really upset. He was looking around all over the net and all over things trying to say, hey, there is no way that this guy should have been penalized for this. He should have gotten his, you know, trigger. He should have been able to crew his vehicle. All of this stuff was still happening, you know, during this. And so I know our group in Galesburg, we started a big, long Facebook thread. Somebody had posted, you know, what does it mean when you say combat, all that kind of stuff. And really, really good discussion came out of it. So if nothing else, I think this just kind of shows Wizards how confusing sometimes the rules can be. But Sean, I have to come and agree with you, like I said, that at the Pro Tour, that's the stuff that matters. Thankfully, he went on to win the match, but it's one of those things where I wish we hadn't spent all of our time focusing on that this weekend.
I only have one problem with Kai saying that. He should have been too busy playing at this Pro Tour to be scouring the net. He is based still in Europe, am I correct? I mean, this was in Ireland. It's not that much of an onus on him. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's got the invite in the easy seat. He's a guy that should be playing, especially when these are based in Europe. I can understand people in different spots in life don't have the time to travel. If this was in Asia or maybe even the U.S., would have been too much for him to get to. But this was a Pro Tour in Europe. I would have preferred to see Kai playing than having the time to scour the net and put up his opinion on this online. Heart of Kirin, Aethersphere Harvester, both had big breakout weekends, but nothing broke out more than the tech from Mardu Vehicles. The top eight was saturated with vehicles. 6 of the 8, Jun Energy Aggro and Black Green Delirium were the other two. Of the 24 to 26 point decks on the weekend, guys, that means decks that went 8-0-2, 8-1-1, or 8-2, Mardu Vehicles had 12 of those decks. The next most popular deck to accrue that many points, Black Green Delirium with 3. Then you had Black Red Aggro with 2. Jeskai Copycat, Sultai Delirium Control, interesting. And Green White Tokens each had 1 deck in that level. So Mardu Vehicles, by far and away, the most dominating deck amongst those in Standard when it comes to those 10-round performances that they were asked to put up. I didn't see this coming at all. I talked about it last week on the show. I thought there would be some angles of innovation on the Saheeli deck, on the Copycat deck, and how you could get better in the mirror. And here the pros came out and decided to play Aggro, Brian. I was a little bit surprised, but the adroitness with which it was handled, the speed of the rounds at a Pro Tour had me feeling a little bit jealous, because they were able to get rounds done seemingly quicker than we can with a 20-person event at my LGS for FNM.
Yeah, that's very, very true. This was nothing like Eldritch Moon, where we just had to wait out the grindy games of you know, Emrakul being cast and then the other player casting it and turns being taken and retaken, etc. It was definitely a different feel for this Pro Tour, and I must say I really liked it. It was quick. It was interesting. You know, you didn't get bored a whole lot just because the rounds were ending so quickly, and the coverage was really good. And they were talking about that as well, just how fast the rounds were going. I, like you, was a little gobsmacked that there was so much aggro, and it was not held in check at all by any of the control decks that we've seen dominate the SCG Tour over the last 3 weeks.
Lucas, so, Esper, Berthu knocking off Marcio Carvalho 3-2 to win the title on Sunday. Matt, what stood out from you, and was that finals a just end? Because I thought it was a delicious finals that really capped off the weekend.
I think the top eight was really good overall. I actually have a couple notes here I wanted to talk about, particular plays that I was really, really impressed with. Lucas was playing Marcio Carvalho. He had a Heart of Kieran on the board, a Pia Nalar on the board with a Thopter token in a Scrap Heap Scrounger. And he had a Shock in his hand, and I think there was something else. Basically, what happened was, instead of him wiping his entire board, he made it so that he traded off his Pia, and he maintained that Shock in his hand to use at a later date, and at a later date, it won him the game. And so he was just looking 5, 6, 7 turns down in the future, saying, okay, you know, I can easily get in for 2 or 3 more damage now, but I can easily give him the chance to block, make bad blocks, put himself into a position, and then keep that Shock so that I can actually kill any of his, like, veteran motorist or anything that pops up. And that's exactly what happened. So that's the big play that stood out to me, where I just watched it and I just kind of scratched my head and said, I totally would have just wiped his board right there. And then I would have lost later because he would have retaliated with a veteran motorist. Overall, though, I think that the whole top eight was amazing. I like that they had a relatively inexperienced player that was able to play. LSV and Marshall both made a comment. He said, you know, if you get a lot of random decks, or if you get a lot of non-pros in the top 32, that means it's a high variance format. If you get a lot of pros in the top 32, that means that the decks that they're playing are not high variance or high skill decks. To me, that just kind of was an eye-opener as a whole. I mean, I don't know if you guys heard any comment like that. Overall, I loved the new setup. Sean and I were talking about this, and I had to weigh in on his broadcasting experience to see if it was truly, you know, a good thing. But I love that the centerpiece is now the featured play area, and you have that ambient noise. It makes it feel more alive. It makes it feel less sterile and less boring. And also, I really loved that they had their news desk overlooking the play area, so you could just see everything that's going on in a Pro Tour, and it just doesn't feel like, you know, 4 or 6 tables actually just playing, and the rest are kind of ignored. Sean, what were your thoughts on that overall?
I think when you're looking at the video, that they're starting to understand, they being Wizards and their video production team, on how to stage an event to make it look bigger and to make it sort of a feast for the eyes while you're watching it. We're learning now, and I say we for Wizards, that this is something that is a spectator sport. It really goes out to many more people that are there in not only the field, but in attendance and in the cheering sections. And just a quick aside, How about two thumbs up for Latin American cheering sections and South American cheering sections? They were really getting into it, and I was enjoying it.
That was so much fun to watch that. And that's what I loved, and Rich Hagen, I think, was talking about that. Wow, it's like you're at a soccer tournament. Tim Willoughby was saying the same thing. It's like we're sporting event. And I'm like, yeah, of course. They're extremely happy. They're energetic. And that's what's missing sometimes. The great thing about it was you could have heard a pin drop in that place during the match. But as soon as the opponent would concede or as soon as somebody clearly had the game and they were scooping up their cards, then, you know, you heard the shouts and the exultations and the songs and the dancing and everything else start. So it was completely professional. And just kind of gave that sense of, this is really, really fun, and this is really, really exciting. We're not just going to kind of say, good game, you know, kind of like the golf people do with the little golf clap. No, this was excited. People were laughing. They were jumping. That's what Magic needs on this stage of the biggest names and the biggest tournament. I think that's really, really fun to see.
Brian, you described it beautifully, and what it reminds me of is poker. Televised poker, where they give the hand the respect to be played out, and then when it comes to a conclusion, the support group celebrates and high fives and stuff. And I think really that's what it reminded me of the most as it was playing out. The other thing that I'm going to nitpick on here is Wizards just needs to learn that they own the stream. And what I mean by that is that everything that is put on the visual, everything that is put on the audio is their own. You see the 15 or 30 second commercial that Twitch shows you before you log on, because remember, Twitch is now the official broadcast partner with Wizards. Other than that, it is a straight and uninterrupted stream. So the nitpick that I have is when Wizard would put up the plaque between hands with the "we'll be right back" in the lower right hand corner, that is completely erroneous. That tells people that you have left them. And this is a broadcast nitpick. Take control of that time. Use a rotating graphic or a card that shows me undefeateds or highest ranking players or where the upcoming pro tours are and when, what sets are coming up. Use that quote unquote downtime to your advantage on the stream, and don't abdicate your responsibility for that window by saying "we'll be right back." So that's just a small nitpick, but Wizards, I think, can get so much more out of just having a little bit of pre-production done that can then run in that place. Guys, we didn't get very much downtime during the top eight, and it's a top eight that really extends itself during the Pro Tour. We've had a couple of these, what I'll call the PBA bowling ladder match top eights now in the Pro Tour. And while I don't want to see this at every GP, I love it for a Pro Tour, Brian. I think this is a fascinating way to sort of string out the drama, and it makes playing for rank in rounds 15 and 16 so much more important and gives so much more gravity to Magic later in the tournament. I love the way they set this up now.
Yeah, this was really, really a phenomenal kind of coming out party. I know Wizards is saying this was kind of like their soft start, soft opening of the team thing, but it was obvious from the get-go that this was going to be successful because everybody got on board with it. There was some absolutely phenomenal teams. The amount of talent on some of those teams was a little bit of jaw-dropping, as we said last week during our pick section. When you assemble the team, it's not just about, hey, these are the best players in the world. It's all about synergy. It's about ego. It's about what does everybody bring to the table. You've got some people who are better at draft, historically, some people who are better at constructed. And it's all got to work together. And, you know, people have to agree on things, and, you know, you've got to work as a team. And so that was really, really fun. I'm curious to see how the teams shake up over the course of the next few months as we, you know, get really into the season. I know that people are going to start having their favorites. That, to me, is what Magic needs. Slowly getting that esport embrace there. I think they're doing a good job. And, yeah, cannot wait for Pro Tour Amon Kett.
Patiently waiting for his turn on the DS as we are about to pass the crown from one try hard to another is the new king. The king is dead. Long live the king. Our Pro Tour Pick'em winner. Yeah, you heard him in the background there. Matt Hurley. Brian Tibbetts had won the first two. He was the king of both Eldritch Moon and Kaladesh. But Matt Hurley on the back of Yuya Watanabe, Li Shitian, and Owen Turtenwald, and then his team pick, Team Puzzle Quest, made him the winner with 208 points. Tibbetts right behind him with Marcio Carvalho, his budding bromance, as we found out on the last Tryhards edition. And Alexander Hain, both actually finished ahead of all three of Hurley's picks, but Tibbetts, you had the albatross of a Sam Black experiment gone bad that just drug you down and kept you from the three-peat. I know that feeling. Nam Song Wook, my wild card pick, finished just 9 spots behind Sam Black and did me in as well. So, Hurley, this is it. How does the crown fit? And what else did you see from the weekend?
Well, first I have to say, I want to thank all my adoring fans, everyone who helped me get here to be the king of the picks.
That's she's in the other room. Just to thank her.
This is when I wish that this show was a little bit more like pro wrestling so that we could have Hurley's like entrance music.
I will say that back to kind of the production thing, the one other thing I want to talk about is they need to change the freaking music when they were introducing the teams. I did like the cards that they had, you know, to show all the members of the team with a little blurb about them. Geez, that music was depressing they had on there. I really like the whole top 8 now. There was actually a play that they had where there was two players who, if they would have drawn, they would have both gotten into top 8. But since they played because they wanted to get actual position, it actually caused the rankings to drop down a little bit. And that's how PVD was able to get in. This, I think, was one of their better pro tours. It did get, I wouldn't say a little boring, but it did kind of get the same old to see, you know, Mardu vehicles on Mardu vehicles. But if you go out and you look at the top 64 deck list, there's some really, really innovative deck list on there. And I do kind of have one gripe as far as how Wizards is going to look at, you know, the bannings and things like that. As far as my picks, all my picks were very even picks, I think. Sean, you actually took first with the team, correct?
Yeah, that was damned by faint praise, I guess I'll call it. I had Musashi for my team. They finished first, Puzzle Quest 7th, and Genesis 10th. I like that little added round. There aren't a big point swing available there, but I think it'll serve as kind of a tiebreaker almost. So,
because even Tibbetts and I think we were only, 60 points apart. Weren't you at like 305, Tibbetts? I mean,
you guys ended up 100 points apart. You won it by 100.
Oh, I did. Yeah. Oh, I thought it was only 60.
No, it was a little. I mean, as soon as I saw that Black was done after day one, I was kind of like, first I was surprised because I had no clue. You know, he's always done so well. So, you know, hey, it happens. But no, I was really happy with my picks. Hain did amazing. I got to see him on camera a couple times. And of course, my boy Marcio Carvalho, the guy who everybody thinks is just a draft master, you know, brought the chops for constructed this pro tour. And man, he's a player to watch. He's just been killing it lately. So yeah, I'm a bigger fan now than I was, even though he's been twice now the groomsman and never the groom.
Brian, are you a little bit worried now that Matt won and so he'll have first pick because you picked Carvalho first with your first pick the last two times? You worried Matt's going to move in and steal some of your list?
If he picks Marcio Carvalho, I'm just going to go one up and just pick Pedro Carvalho.
That is awesome pre-planning on your part. We'll do picks again coming up before Pro Tour. Amon Cat. If you want a follow-up article to this weekend, Mike Segrist on Channel Fireball had an article, How to Identify the Best Deck After Pro Tour. Check that out for yourself if you're looking for something after this Pro Tour weekend. That was the accolades. Now it's time for the complaints. That's right. I'm a little bit salty about something. We're going to go around the room after I mention this title, and you guys are going to throw out a favorite or two for me. And I didn't tell you to prep for this because I wanted your gut reaction. Tibbetts, I'll start with you. Here's what I want. Wizards, this is a multi-million dollar business. Get a new trophy. That piece of trash that you have on display all weekend long belies the love that players have for this game, belies the dedication and the sweat and the blood and the tears and the hard work that it takes to get to the Pro Tour. My God, it looks like kindergartners put a hot glue gun to it. Not even all of the labels that list the Pro Tour winners are lined up and symmetrical. That thing just looks terrible. I mean, let's start with the crappy plastic Planeswalker symbol. And then you've got the not-so-vintage bowling ball bag handle that they attach to the top of it. And after that, it's just a tower of despair. Let's get some real trophy designers in on this thing. Brian, give me one or two of your favorite trophies, whether it's from around the world of sports or Quiz Bowl, since you're a teacher, or Latin Club, or whatever.
Favorite trophies, huh?
And we're talking about aesthetics here, not the sport.
I know this is timely and this might seem like a cop-out, but there is something quite simply elegant about the Lombardi Trophy.
Agreed.
For the Super Bowl. There's something to be said for just that kind of the little tapered column with the football on the top. You know the sport. It's there. It's in that silver. It's not garish. It's not. It doesn't have a ton of, you know, huge history around the trophy like Lord Stanley's Cup does. But the name associated with it, Lombardi, you know, just oozes football lore. And so I would say that's one that I really like. I really do like, for as bad, Sean, and I agree with you, for as bad as the Pro Tour trophy is, I have to say the World Championship trophy I actually kind of liked. So I feel like Wizards has it in them to do good trophies. Man, they just, you know, they're just sucking it when you win the Pro Tour, because you look at that one compared to the World Champion trophy and you're like, man, I'd rather have that thing.
All right, Matt, what about you? You got a couple trophies that stick out aesthetically in your mind that you could point Wizards to?
I'm a big fan of Simple is Better. I like the Lombardi Trophy. I never even would have thought of that one, but I got to say the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and the Stanley Cup is beloved in the world of sports.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that. But the other one is, I don't know what the name of the trophy is, but it's the Triple Crown Trophy in tennis.
I don't know that one.
Whoa. There's no Triple Crown. Triple Crown is in horse racing. The Grand Slam is in tennis.
Yeah, the Grand Slam in tennis. That's what I meant.
That's all right. Hey, Matt. It's just, Matt, you live in Derby City now. You might want to know those things.
There's a famous picture of like Andre Agassi like kissing it. It's elegant, but it's another. I wouldn't call it simple, but it's very old school kind of. So I got to say those are my two favorite trophies.
Yeah, you guys mentioned my top two, the Stanley Cup and the Lombardi Trophy. Wimbledon, Brian, I know you're a fan. That's elegant little old worldly. And here's how elegance might transcend the sport that it is involved with / attributed to. The Nextel Cup trophy for NASCAR, I think, is amazing. It's the double rippling flags. That's very simple, very iconic of NASCAR with the checkered flag. They do the checkers in sort of alternating silvers to make them stand out. And it's just a double rippling flag on a wooden base. And I think that is very cool. Iconic for their sport. Again, less is more when it comes to those Wizards. Spend a little bit of that multi-million dollar cash. Not the money that was earmarked for Magic Online. Feel free to keep that in a separate pot. But take some of the other money, hire an actual artist, and design yourself a real Pro Tour trophy. All right, that's the only thing I was salty about over the weekend. Guys, what else stood out to you from this week of Magic that was capped off by the Pro Tour? Brian, you're the birthday boy still. We'll let you go first.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll try harder from now on just because I'm getting older as well. I actually have to say that I really liked the production values of this Pro Tour. I thought that the commentary was phenomenal. I thought everybody was on top of their game. I did miss Randy Buehler, and then I didn't miss Randy Buehler. I thought everybody else did a really, really good job. Seeing LSV in the booth, as much as it pains me not to have him down on the floor schooling people, he's the best person to have right there, trying to, you know, be the in the mind of the player and, you know, what's going to happen next and what the strategy is and things like that. I think that Brian David Marshall did such a good job. Rich Hagen's energy is just phenomenal. And Tim Willoughby is the guy who I think gets kind of like, you know, not that he's a rookie or anything, but he's got the up and coming voice of Magic, and he is done in such a good job of this Pro Tour, and he's just impeccably dressed, man. Every time I see him, I'm like, wow, just looking sharp. Kudos to Wizards for that, even if they can't design a trophy.
You know, I'm going to say this with all the love in my heart. Tim Willoughby, the nerd's nerd. I love the guy. I think he does a fantastic job, and I think you're right. We don't have to announce these sort of things, but I think he's the up-and-coming understudy to Rich Hagan. If Rich couldn't make one, I think Willoughby slots in there, brings his own flair, and the Pro Tour would not skip a beat with him doing that role on the broadcast, I think. King, is there anything else that stood out from you before we get into the elevator this week?
Well, since we're on the gripe section of it.
Let it fly, man. Let it fly.
Wizards, which I think this is a good thing, Wizards added that second ban window. I still am of the thought that the Saheeli combo is format warping to the point where you either play a super aggro deck or you play a Saheeli deck. I do think there's a lot of aggro decks, but I think it just pushes out too many mid-range decks that the combo decks just overwhelm you. My complaint here is that with all these hyper-aggressive Mardu vehicles running around, what's the number one, you know, expensive card in there? Heart of Kirin. Now, in both of your guys' shops, do you know of guys who are going to run out and buy three or four Heart of Kirins when they're $25 a pop?
No.
No.
The issue here is that a lot of the data that Wizards get is from online, from Magic Online, that they utilize for determining if there's a ban, or they get it from tournaments that require deck lists that are registered with the DCI. So my problem here is that you're not going to see the Mardu vehicles. I'm not saying anything in the Mardu vehicles necessarily needs to be banned, but you went from Smuggler's Copter, which was a rare, to Heart of Kirin, which was a mythic. So essentially you just took the same deck and you went from an $8 or $10 card. I know they don't look at the secondary market. And you took it to a $25 card. These are pushing $30 online, like on Magic Online. So I don't think a ton of people are going to buy three or four of those just off the top. You know, the pros obviously will and the grinders will. I don't think they're going to see the data that supports that, okay, maybe we need to alter something. And they're just going to look at what's being played and they're not going to determine why is that being played. I'm hoping that they dig a little deeper into the data, but I'm not confident that they do. Do you guys agree with that assessment or not?
I'm actually okay with Heart of Kirin, and here's why. Number one, my biggest offense for an aggressively costed vehicle is a crewing cost of one. Heart of Kirin, you can use your Planeswalker loyalty, but barring that, it takes three power to crew it. Yes, Scrap Heap Scrounger jumps to mind because we saw a lot of that. And you have Toolcraft Exemplar being able to up its power based on having Heart of Kirin in play. But those are two cards that are pretty easy for decks with removal to deal with. Heart of Kirin and the things that power it, both easily Fatal Pushed. We saw a ton of Fatal Push on Heart of Kirin this weekend. Grasp of Darkness, other things take care of it as well. So while it is more financially aggressive, Hurley, you're right. And when Smuggler's Copter was in standard, it was in that sort of $17 to $19 range. It's fallen off since the ban. Heart of Kirin a little bit more than that, but I actually think it's less of an offender because of the crew cost of three as opposed to Aethersphere Harvester, which still has the crew cost of one and really strings games out, Brian.
I'm not too concerned about Heart of Kirin. I think this is going to be kept in check. Just like, you know, we've seen some swings here. You know, we, as soon as the bans were announced, suddenly the Saheeli combo came online after the holidays, and everybody was kind of lamenting that. Well, then Black Green Constrictor seems to be the foil to that deck. Well, guess what? Mardu Vehicles is a foil to most control decks. This format, if it keeps going this way, I think is actually going to be very, very healthy because, as you said, Hurley, there's a lot of really, really good decks there in the 18 to 20 point range, the 20, 23 point range, a lot of really good deck builders down there. And those things should not be poo-pooed just because they didn't make top eight or anything like that. There's some really strong decks and a lot of good archetypes there that I think people have finally tuned to the point of any of those decks on any given day, depending on what your metagame is, are going to take some tournaments down. So I'm not too concerned about Heart of Kirin right now. I think Smuggler's Copter, with that blue-white flash deck, was just way too powerful and just ran away with too many things too quick. Heart of Kirin, you do have to spend resources in order to, you know, make it happen, either the loyalty with the Planeswalker or the crew cost, as Sean said. It's not just running away with stuff like with the loot effect of Smuggler's Copter, etc. I would be surprised if Wizards did something about that at the next ban announcement in, what is it now, 4 weeks? I hope not, because, you know, multiple bannings in the first 3 months of a format, I think, would just kind of let people throw up their arms and be like, well, I'm going to go play Modern.
My thing is, I don't think that Heart of Carriage should necessarily be banned, but I think it's a side effect of the Saheeli combo. I don't want people to be kind of shoehorned into playing, feel like they're shoehorned into playing the Mardu Vehicles deck or the Vehicle decks where you're running, you know, at minimum two or three of the Heart of Kirin's. But, I mean, I guess you look back and it reminds me a lot of back when Jeskai Black was running around. You know, it's $60 or $80 Jaces. People got super bored of that format, and I hope that it doesn't happen here. I'm still thinking they should ban Felidar Guardian, but I'll see what happens. That's my big gripe.
We'll see what Wizards decides to do in the next banned and restricted update, coming up sooner than you would think. That brings us up to this week's ride in the elevator. There are two reliable things that make the finance markets move in Magic: banned and restricted announcements, and when the community figures out that there was a mistake printing made. There's a mistake in the elevator this week. We'll let you decide if it's mad or not.
The Tezzeret Simulacrum. If you don't know what that is, that's in the Tezzeret Planeswalker deck. This is an uncommon in that deck, but this is the only place you can get that, so it's a one-up in that deck. So this went from 75 cents, and now it's up to $2. You should be selling these. I mean, these are not necessarily $2 cards. I do think this was a mistake, and this is probably a $1 to $2 card. Tezzeret Simulacrum. If you can find them in cheap boxes, pick them up. If you have extras, sell them.
I'm not actually here right now. This is just my Sean Simulacrum. Brian?
It is.
What do you got for 3 minutes to brew?
All right, guys. We're going to go a little bit different than 3 minutes to brew. I think this is worthy, but you're up for it. Now that we've seen Aether Revolt come out, we've seen kind of things settle down. One of the more hyped cards or cycles that we want, that we've been exposed to now, is the expertise cards. My 3 minutes to brew tonight is pick the one expertise that you feel is going to make the biggest difference in Standard over the next few months, and tell us why and in what deck you see it. Sean, I'm gonna start with you.
Yeheni's expertise. No hesitation right there. If the format continues to be aggressive, vehicles need pilots. Yeheni's expertise lets you wipe out that field on the other side and drop a 3-drop. Now, there's a huge difference between 2 and 3. Kari Zev's expertise in red, I think, is too narrow and restricted to 2 or less, whereas Yeheni's expertise wipes the board, something black loves to do, buys itself some time, especially when it's paired with its favorite color, blue. I had the opportunity to cast some Yeheni's expertise over the weekend and follow up by dropping a free Oath of Jace. Jaws dropped open when I did this, and I gotta tell you, it's one of the more powerful feelings I've had in Standard. A blue-black control deck that adopts Yeheni's expertise to wipe the go-wide or the pilots of vehicles, and then can follow up with a big three like that, I think that's gonna be number one. Matt, what about you?
I think Sram's expertise, being able to create 3 servo tokens, is amazing. The problem is it just gets kind of elbowed out by Gideon. On a long-term play, it's going to be a lot better. I mean, you might see that pop up in Modern every now and then, because you being able to drop that into, you know, any planeswalker, any creatures that buff your tokens, whatever, you know, you want to call it, I think is super powerful. So Sram's expertise would be mine.
I'm going to go with, I think Yeheni's overall is going to still be the card of the expertise cycle that's going to be good. But the one that I want to talk about is Baral's expertise. If Control makes a comeback, and I think that it will, because some of those Jeskai control lists are really looking pretty strong right now, Baral's expertise seems to me to be the one that has the most upside. For 5, return up to 3 target artifacts and or creatures to their owner's hands, and you may cast a card with converted mana costs 4 or less from your hand. I'm just thinking about Glimmer of Genius. A Baral's expertise, where you get to scry 2 and draw 2, seems to be a pretty darn good backbreaking play. Sean, like you said, playing Yeheni's expertise and then dropping an oath, that just sounds gross. And I'm glad I wasn't there to throw up a little bit in my mouth when that happened. So I'm excited about the expertise to see how they're used. I don't see them as 4-ofs, obviously, in decks, but one or two, maybe three ofs. I definitely think the red one is probably the weakest. Green is just too expensive for Constructed, but Brawl's Expertise is the one I'm looking at in the control matchup, but I'm excited about the Expertise cycle going forward.
That's an excellent topic, Brian. Which Expertise card do you think makes the biggest impact going forward? That brings us up to what we do to get better at Magic this week on the heels of 3 minutes to brew. Matt, you're wearing the crown. What'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Well, since I was sick for 3 days, well, 2.5 days this week, where, you know, I would do about 20 minutes of work and sleep for 3 hours because that's all how awesome I felt, I decided to stay at home and do a lot of work this weekend. And when I was doing that, I had a lot of Pro Tour time. Watched a lot of Pro Tour. That's pretty much it. I mean, I played the, you know, the drafts and stuff Friday night that I had, but it was definitely watch a lot of Pro Tour. It helped, too, to kind of communicate with you guys a little bit, you know, about what was going on and find out, you know, why something would happen. But it was just Pro Tour, Pro Tour, Pro Tour. And it shows, even with aggro decks, there's a lot of strategy that goes into aggro decks. It's not just your red deck. You know, people say red deck wins is easy. It's not always super easy. And this aggro deck, being a three-color aggro deck, is probably one of the harder aggro decks I've seen play in a long time.
For me, I listened to something that actually made a huge difference to me. You guys know that I'm always trying to get better with mana bases. I think they mean so much to how you construct your deck and how they play out that I'm going to do something that I really haven't done very often, and that's recommend an episode from another cast. The guys at Constructed Criticism, go back and find cast 172 from Constructed Criticism. 172, they take a large portion of that cast and dedicate it to how to build better mana bases. And it was something that I found extremely interesting and extremely helpful. So if you're wondering maybe why your deck maybe fights you a little bit and you can't get what you need when it comes to the land department, it's your mana base. Go back and grab Constructed Criticism, episode 172. Brian, what about you?
I don't know if this is about getting better, but something that gave me some focus just about kind of the world of Magic and, you know, how we approach it and things like this was how one of the not quite yet Hall of Famers, I'm sure it's going to be someday, Paulo Vitor Damo de Rosa, the Brazilian from Channel Fireball, made top eight and said, I think, to Patrick Chapin at some point this weekend, I heard the story, that Chapin was talking about, I've got to go to the Hall of Fame dinner on some night and stuff. Damo de Rosa said something like, I need to be there. I want to be there. And he said it not as like a gloat, like, oh, I've been screwed out of this. I've got work to do yet. And I think it's so good to see that this guy still has this fire. He's got such a great resume, and I'm sure he'll end up in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame. But it was really, really cool to see him just with that fire, with that passion, and just kind of, you know, again, reflecting on why I play the game. I know I'm never going to get to the Pro Tour, but it's still fun to know that I can go down and be like, hey, I'm going to try to win game day this Saturday. I'm going to try to win that draft pod that I enter. I'm going to try to win this sealed pre-release, you know, things like that. You know, always set your goals. And so to see the pros still with that fire gave me a little bit of fire.
While Brian's trying to win game day, any of the casts that you listen to on MTGcast could help you win your next encounter, maybe your next trade. So think about donating to MTGcast.com. If you can make a recurring donation, they would love you for it. If you want to make a one-time donation, you're making a big impact on the MTGcast community. Oh, you brave soul, sticking with us through another episode of Tryhards. We'll see you next week as we all await the Banhammer.